Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG 13.
Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Will and DJ podcast. Until we find a better name, we are open to suggestions, by the way, on Twitter. If you guys have any creative things for me and DJ, we are open to... having a nice groupie name, maybe a name in the podcast, but, OTA's kicking off. DJ was there yesterday, and we'll get into that before getting into some more painful memories of some of the moments that made you almost want to quit being a Jets fan. We will get to more positive stuff in future episodes. DJ, how we doing?
I'm doing good, man. OTA's was yesterday. It was boring as hell, but I know the Jet fans, they want to hear about it. They want to read about it. They want to talk about it. So that's why we're here. We're here to provide that. I sacrificed my time, my freedom, my entertainment, my enjoyment to watch, a bunch of 7-on-7 for you guys, not for myself, not to pay the bills, not so I can eat, but for you guys, because you guys pay the bills. But anywho.
Yeah, man, it's OTAs are... they're fun because obviously a lot of the stuff coming out of the draft, there's been a lot of hype the offseason. It's the first time you get to see people, get to see everyone, in video and in helmets and just moving around doing football activities as opposed to just hearing them talk. So any big takeaways? I mean, for me, at least listening yesterday, I wasn't able to go. My other job has me quite swamped right now, but it seems like the biggest takeaways are just Zach being louder and obviously being much heavier in a good way. And then just Sauce and Garrett Wilson, a few other rookies looking like they belong in the NFL in their first day in front of other people. Is that kind of what your main takeaways were? I know it's hard to take away much, but is that, if anything, what you kind of took away?
Some of my takeaways were because in OTAs with Zach, you have to just see his, the processing, like how he's moving through his reads, how quickly he's moving through his reads. I think he did a slightly better job of that. Obviously, it's still early, and it's harder to detect how well he's really moving. But you could see how he was going from 1-2-3. Sometimes he'd read right to left, hit the check down, or left to right, find the check down. It was happening a lot more efficiently, a lot smoother. That's all that really mattered at the time. Like, we know he has a fantastic arm. You know, he can rifle into tight windows, things of that nature. But like, as I wrote in my article yesterday, it doesn't really matter. Like, obviously it matters about his arm talent, but for him to become a franchise guy, it's going to be cerebral for him. It's going to be all in between the ears. It's not going to be all the off platform throws that he can make. Because again, I won't say most quarterbacks can do that because most can't, but most quarterbacks can make majority of the throws. What separates them is their ability to process and read and dissect defenses. Now, there's some quarterbacks that can get away with not being able to do that as much because they have more talent, whether it's through their legs, and it's just some have stronger arms so they can make certain throws when their read is slightly off, like let's say like a Justin Herbert or a Josh Allen. But again, most they can still read defenses and slice them up in that aspect too. And it's good to see that early, it's early, but good to see that he was able to go through his reads a little bit quicker. Like he was a lot. There's some throws where he was extremely decisive. Like there's one to like Corey Davis where like Corey Davis beats Bryce Hall down the sideline, but like he's quick. It's out breaking around. He's quick with that throw. Right. It's just 1-2-3, boom. Same like Elijah. He did the same thing with Elijah. 1-2-3 throw. Elijah caught it, but DJ Reed punched it out. But yeah, I think that was what you want to see. You want to see the efficiency. You want to see the quickness in going through the reads. When it's not there, going to your check down. I mean, there were some plays where, you know, he held the ball along that you would like, but I think that's going to be more of a theme now because there's just more talent on the defense in the secondary. So there's going to be the plays where it's not immediately open. He's going to have to create outside of structure, which is a good thing. That's actually not a bad thing. Because the last year, like in OTAs, like it was like, when I mean, like if we carried what we saw in OTAs, let's say there was no training camp and it was just OTAs, and you went straight to playing regular football games, you would have thought Zach was going to be, I don't know, you thought Zach was going to have, like, at bare minimum, like a Kyler Murray type rookie year, because he just looked that efficient, that good in terms of, you know, being able to produce in practice, because obviously shorts, t-shirts, yada, yada, yada. But again, like, there wasn't that much resistance from the defensive side. This year, we will transition to that. You can see that there's a upgrade in talent, I guess, from the skill position spots.
So something I noticed, and obviously I was not there yesterday, so I can't say in person until I see Zach in person again. It's kind of hard for me to like really properly judge it, but he just looks like a more natural NFL player. I know it sounds so like overblown and the weight stuff sometimes we get too much into, but I do think it's a big deal.
It is.
I think it's probably one of the biggest themes of the stories of this offseason is literally Zach looking like a grown man. More so, and I'm not asking everyone to be Cam Newton and be 250, 260 pounds and 6'6". Like that's not, you know, whatever, but we've seen a lot of these guys come into the NFL. And yes, we saw Sam Darnold. You've seen, you know, your fair share of quarterbacks of recent years. You come in, you get ready for the draft, you get your body in shape, and then you kind of just like coast and you're naturally talented enough that you can still be in the NFL and you throw, and that's great. Doesn't really work. And, you know, the NFL catches up to you quickly and guys who adapt and learn. And those are the guys that are successful. Look, Justin Herbert's been awesome his first 2 years. He's gotten beat up a little bit. He's up to 245 pounds from like 220 last year. And he knows probably I'm going to take more. I got to learn how to keep taking contact and all these different things. So I think it's important. From another offensive perspective, again, offensive line, it's going to be impossible to evaluate without pads on. Tight ends almost, they're a little bit hard to evaluate without pads on. I can tell you for a fact, being in shorts and playing tight end was always fun because you don't get beat up at all and you kind of get free releases the whole time.
Right.
From a Garrett Wilson perspective, again, for sample size, what did he look like in person? Did he look like he belonged on an NFL field, or was it a lot of like, you know, this guy, I see it, or, you know, anything like that, or any takeaways there?
No, I don't really have any takeaways. I mean, the receiver room was like, they're rotating like crazy, right? Calvin Jackson got reps, and Calvin Jackson, Jeff Smith, DJ Montgomery, they got reps with Zach. You know what I'm saying?
Like the Week 5 starters.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they were getting reps with Zach. So like, it was like a heavy rotation, you know? So he didn't really do much, which is, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, like nothing to be concerned about, like again, going to one practice. Like he didn't really, like Elijah didn't really do much either, but like, I believe like Elijah didn't do too much last year during OTAs like that either. Well, I mean, there were some days where he flashed, but like he really came on during training camp. That's when you're like, oh, there might be something here. So yeah, I mean, Garrett Wilson, I mean, I'm not saying he didn't do anything, but like for the most part, like, he didn't, because he just didn't get any reps. So
I guess we could kind of go to the other side of the ball, because it is, defense is a little interesting, especially with skill guys. You can just, again, it's just seeing how these guys fit in. No one's ever seen them on an NFL practice field against, right, all NFL competition. It seemed like Sauce belongs from day one. Like, again, it's one practice in 7-on-7, but like I saw his name quite a bit and it was pretty much all very positive stuff. Would you kind of agree with from that assessment?
Yeah, I, to be honest, it's not even really like what he was doing on the field. Well, let me not say that, but with Sauce, when you see Sauce on the football field, you immediately say the Jets had nothing close to that type of physical talent in their secondary last year. Like nothing came within breathing room of that. Like this guy has a towering presence when he's on the football field.
He's a big dude. Like, he's legit 6'3".
Yeah, but like when he's in press coverage, good luck. There were some plays I remember. I think Irving. It's Irving, or, yeah, I think it's Irving or Ivan. Wait, Irving. Let's go Irving. He like, I remember those couple plays where I watched those two go at it, and like when Sauce got his hand on him, that was basically it. And I remember that one play during 7-on-7 goal line. I don't really take too much from 7-on-7 goal line. It's, you know, it's basically like, you know, 2-yard line. You're trying to get the ball in. But there was a play where Zach wanted to go to Corey, like, right? Corey's running a fade route. Zach looks right, immediately tries to throw it to him. But, like, Sauce is just all over Corey. Corey gets no separation, so Zach has to, like, turn left, and he throws it to Braxton, who was guarded by Isaiah Dunn. I think Braxton draws a PI. And that was basically that. But, like, quickly you were like, yo, like, okay. Like, they didn't – you know what I'm saying? Like, you see the talent immediately. Now, this would that matter in, like, 3-4 months? We'll see. But, like, initially, like, you know, flashing. Like, I wrote about that, like, when coming into OTAs – that's what you want to see. Good Lord. Throw a little dry pause. But that's what you want to see. You want to see, you know, the talent that you brought in flash. Like, that's what matters, right? Like, you can't really, like, there's only so much you can take from OTAs. Like, last year, like, immediately we saw Zach had an arm, right? Michael Carter, we saw he had some explosiveness. With Elijah, we saw the quick twitch with, who else? I mean, right now we see Sauce, we see the physical presence. DJ Reed, we see the twitchiness to get in out of breaks to break up some passes, you know, like that's what you want to see from the guys that you brought in, you know, Tyler Conklin. Like, I see him make a couple of nice grabs yesterday. So again, I'm like, it's early. But again, you see why you guys were brought in.
Yeah, it's just nice when you look like guys and the NFL is hard. Like, and in day one, not everyone's able to click right away. And again, does it really matter? No, not really. But it is nice, a little bit of confidence to go, okay, I belong here. And when you know that day one, and it doesn't take you to week two of training camp, week three, when it's already kind of hard to move up the roster and things like that, when you can walk in day one and say, I belong, like, Sauce is going to be a day one starter. I'm not sure, like, every corner can walk on the field out of the draft. And yes, the Jets took him number 4. I understand that. But at the same time, guys struggle. I mean, he did play at Cincinnati. He didn't play it at Alabama or LSU. And yes, mm-hmm. they played some tougher competition this year and stuff like that. And he looked good. So just being able to walk on the field day one, media is there. Like, you know, I'm going to get my feet wet a little bit. This is what I was going to kind of ask you. And I think me and you will talk about this a lot more during camp when we're both there and we can kind of both given a good assessment of it. But does it not feel like there's a lot more talent on the field just in general? Like the level of, like, you're watching legitimate both sides of the ball, you can go, okay, these guys can compete, not we're pulling at straws. I think last year, me and you talked about this on my other pod, was like, oh, there was a really nice play of like Bryce Hall and Elijah going at it. And it's like, that's nice, but like, there's a lot better corners probably than Bryce overall in the NFL. And there's honestly a lot better receivers than Elijah. So it's not really the best.
Right, that's a good comparison. Point.
Did it feel yesterday? It was like, okay, there's some legit goddamn good talent on this roster that's gonna be fun to watch go at it for the next couple months.
That you saying there's some good goddamn talent on this roster.
it's rare. It's rare, man.
That's not like a Jets fan that has watched a lot of teams that don't
bad
have
bad teams.
Yeah, a lot of bad teams.
When I think I can compete
talent on this roster,
look, man, I was not that good. I was good in high school, I wasn't that good in college. I felt legitimately like I could compete and give more at the tight end position at some points last year than I was getting. And I'm not even being – there's no hyperbole in that. So
I know this.
I don't feel like this anymore. I did feel like this. So, you know, if the standard's not me, that's a good thing.
Amen. But, yes, you made a really good point. Dang, throw dry again.
Too much glizzies, man.
Too much glizzies. All right, so – you made a really good point. We talk about Elijah and Bryce, right? Like, them boys going at it, right? And you made a really good point. Like, there's for sure better corners than Bryce, and there's for sure better receivers than Elijah. So that's not – I mean, it's good in theory, but in reality, it's not as good as it may seem. Because we saw that immediately. Like, it took Elijah. Like, granted, you know, that wasn't all on Elijah, and I'll leave it at that. But it took him a while to get going, right? And, you know, eventually when you got going, you started to see what you saw in training camp. But that's a good point, because, right, like, Elijah was going against Bryce and Bless a lot and Isaiah Dunn a lot. And no disrespect to them. Like, they're solid players, but, like, there was always going to be an immediate step up the second he started playing other corners, right? Good thing about it. Like, I think we talked about it on a couple podcasts before. Like, Elijah went from playing, you know, going against Bryce and Bless to then, like, week one, you're going against JC Jackson, right? You know what I'm saying? And week two, you're going against
JC Horn. JC Horn.
And
JC Jackson.
Yeah, then you go to JC Jackson. You feel me?
That's like the same thing with Zach, too, right? Like, if you really think about it, last year, like you kind of mentioned, right? There's, you know, there was days in practice, and yes, it's not all fully changed, but, you know, Zach's going a 7-on-7 period versus Sherrod Neesman, Elijah Riley, Bless Austin, and Michael Carter, or Brandon Echols, or Bryce Hall, whatever. And again, all respect, they're probably more all good NFL depth pieces, and some guys have starter potential.
Yeah.
But it's a little different than going against Sauce, DJ Reed, Jordan Whitehead, all guys who are expected to be at worst average NFL starters, or really supposed to be above average to Pro Bowl level starters, at all three of those guys. So we have that. But no, I'm saying, like, their ceiling is more so, like, the ceiling is not a...
I ain't say nothing, brother.
You didn't draft Sauce at four to be an average starter.
I had a twitch in my eye, bro.
Okay. But, like, in general, I'm just saying, like, you're going against guys who it should make you better. Like, the iron sharpens iron thing is going to be the most overused phrase of all time. I hate it. I know Connor hates it. And there is times where it's stupid, right? Like, there was no iron sharpening iron. Carl Lawson was just kicking the shit out of Mekhi Becton for six straight weeks.
Right. Because
it's a terrible matchup for Mekhi and whatever. But there is something, especially at receiver and corner, where the Jets do have very versatile, very different corners. Sauce is very different than DJ Reed. And it should be, in theory, very good for Elijah Moore, Garrett Wilson, or Corey Davis to be able to go against different corners who present different skill sets.
Absolutely.
I don't know what it'll mean long term, but I just think training camp being competitive is a good thing. Like, the Jets have not, I don't feel like training camp has been competitive enough where it's like, oh, the defense kicked the offense's ass. But then it's like eight straight practices. If that's not good, that was like the Greg Williams teams where the defense actually was pretty good and the offense was bad. Last year, I felt like the offensive line was just losing so much to the defensive line that we couldn't see anything happen in practice. It was like Zach would break the play. It would obviously be a sack in a real game. And guess what? Week one came and those guys were still open and Zach was still making plays to try to get out of the pocket. But another team actually can hit you now. And there was a million sacks and the offense looked terrible. So that not happening this year will be, I think we'll get them in a true sense ready for week one, as opposed to going in there and kind of getting, well, we got punched in the mouth for three quarters because we weren't ready.
Right. Yeah. You know, and that's what joint practice is there for too, right? Where you can, you know, go against other corners and go against other teams and, you know, be able to compete in that aspect. Right. Cause you know, last year, I knew after that Eagles joint practice, they weren't going to be very good like, at all. Because, like, the Eagles, on paper, were not supposed to be good. And, like, they kicked the shit out of the Jets in joint practice. Like, they were, like, two-minute drills. Actually, I think every two-minute drill that the Jets had, like, first team, they didn't score, like, multiple days. They didn't – both days, they didn't score. So, like you knew. Like, it's same with, like
– the Packers one was bad.
Yeah, same, like – and Green Bay was even worse, you know, so.
Yeah, that was one of those, like, we kind of expected the Green Bay one. You're traveling, you're going to Green Bay, they're Super Bowl favorites. But then when they came home and the Eagles won, like, they got Becton and AVT back for that, those joint practices, and, like, it looked really bad. And Fletcher Cox was, like, sunning people, which, again, granted, he does that to pretty much every team. But the thing is, they played the Eagles, and that's exactly what happened in the regular season, and Fletcher Cox did the same thing, and it's, like, nothing changed, so. One other question I want to ask you before we get to the other stuff, because OTA is obviously and stuff.
We'll get to the fun stuff.
Did you get the sense? I know Salah talked a lot about it, of Zach's voice getting louder. And it does make a lot of sense to me of, like, the louder when you're a leader, and not to the Jamal Adams or a player of that ilk, where it's a lot of, like, there's just a lot of talking constantly. So you can't really tell what it's really meant to be. Did you get the sense? Kind of had, did Zach look like he was, like, commanding the huddle a little bit better than last year, and, like, kind of just more of, like, he looked, like, comfortable, or it's, like, kind of hard. It was kind of hard to tell just because
it's hard. So you can't really command a huddle off 7-on-7 anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, nah, man, that's, I can't really speak too much to that. I mean, like, right now, I mean, like I try to steer away from cliche talk and, like, May and April and June because
it's all cliche talk.
It's all cliche talk. You know, where has, no matter where you, what team it is, no matter how good or bad the quarterback is from the previous year, whatever it is, whatever situation, when do they say, like, yeah, he's not commanding the huddle? You know what I'm saying? Or like,
this guy's not in good shape.
Yeah, you know, like, so I kind of stay away from cliche talk. Because, man, it's just, I'm not going to waste my time.
It was pretty funny to me. There is, let me see if I'm going to pull it up here while we're on this. Quinton Williams, who is.
Quinton Williams is so trained at media talk.
So Quinton Williams yesterday, direct quote, wants to get bigger, faster, stronger this offseason. Did so by lowering body fat percentage. So I'm going to read you. This is all Connor's tweets. Okay. This is all Connor Hughes from the last 4 years since Quinton has been drafted. Quinton Williams crushes conditioning test field, wants to get stronger and faster and leaner. Quinton Williams, 2020, I trained my butt off this season to get quicker, faster, and stronger. Quinton Williams in 2021, let's see if I can find it. Quinton Williams, 2021, wants to get bigger, faster, stronger this offseason, did so by lowering body fat percentage. And then this year, wants to get bigger, faster, stronger. Point being, there is a lot of the same rhetoric that gets used every year. Sam Darnold was asked yesterday, does he think he's a good NFL quarterback? He responded, yes, I feel I belong. Shocker, because that's what people do at this time of year. Guess what? Ezekiel Elliott, his rotational May 25th quote, I am in the best shape of my life. That's great. You're probably fat as shit. That's probably what.
Okay, so has there ever so someone said they're in the best shape of their life. I know we're going on a tangent, but has an athlete ever said, I'm in the best shape of my life, and then they proceed to have a good year following saying, I'm in the best shape of my life? I feel like that's when you're at the cliff, right? I'm in the best shape of my life. And you step off that cliff, and then you fall into a abyss of washness after that.
Anyone who's over year three that says that, I get huge question marks. My other favorite one, which has never, quite literally never worked, ask Arian Foster or Cam Newton or a million other guys. I went vegan and cut out red meat. Okay, good for you. And I'm not trying to offend anybody. That is, if you choose to do so, that is awesome. Good for you. It's never worked. Everyone gets infinitely, they lose all their powers. Arian Foster sucked after that. Cam Newton quite literally went to become one of the worst quarterbacks in football directly after cutting out meat. Let's not have any Jets talk about best shape of their life. Denzel Mims is bound for getting traded based on saying that. Lawrence Cager is probably now going to get cut because he is in the best shape of his life. It's not great. So let's just get fat. Like, hopefully Zach gets 240 and he's fat. He'll probably throw for 5,000 yards. we'll get to, again, as things go along with OTAs and minicamp, and I think minicamp's in 2 weeks, which is a little bit more intense than OTAs, obviously. And then, obviously, as we get into camp, and camp will be much more in-depth on practices, and we'll overreact all the time. It'll be week one overreactions every day. But we'll get more in-depth there as things go on. Obviously, yesterday, it's just, I don't want to talk for 45 minutes about that. So I appreciate everyone. We got a ton of more voicemails. Please keep, every time we do these, the voicemails are funny. You can let a few F-bombs go. Let it all out. We did moments that made you want to quit being a fan, darkest moments as a fan. We again also get to, you know, the fun times as well, but we figured we'd start with some more fun content. We want to go, which one do we want to go first? We want to go Bills game first, or should we go butt fumble first? Cause I feel like butt fumble.
We had a couple butt fumble ones that, you know, that we had two butt fumble ones that I could empathize with.
Let's see what we got here. We're going to go with Killian T. We'll go with yours first.
It didn't make me almost want to leave the team, the fam, that moment. I still literally have cuts on my knuckles from punching a hole in my wooden dresser from that play. Literally, like, came home from Bible study. You feel me? Thanksgiving. You feel me? Mom's, you know, trying to get you out there to be with the family, watching the football game. And all of a sudden, you see this. You feel me? I punched a hole clean through my dresser. Family come running in my room. they see the play happening, knowing I'm a Jet fan, they see what's going on, they see the play. Dude, I'm getting clowned for the rest of the night. That play, literally, I still have the scars, bro. But I'm still here. J-E-T-S, Jets. Hopefully we can turn this ship around.
That was true depression.
J-T-S, Jets.
Right at the end, he was...
It was like, man, you know, J-E-T-S.
Yeah, hopefully we could turn around. Killian, I can appreciate that one. I believe we have one more for the butt fumble that I'll get to here.
And then we can dive into it.
Definitely 2015 Bills game.
Oh, nope, that's Paulie G of the Bills game. So we'll get to that one. That one I know will be a common one.
I left Thanksgiving dinner from Long Island to go to MetLife Stadium for the Jets versus the Patriots. By the time I got there, the Jets were down 14-0. We got a beer, sat down, and the next play was the butt fumble. We immediately got up out of our seats, and we left. That's as close as I've ever come to quitting my Jets fandom.
That was from Jim, so appreciate that one. The butt fumble one's tough. It was... As usual, on prime time on Thanksgiving, the Jets are coming off 2008, very good. They lose at the end, but don't make the playoffs. But you could see they were going to be a special team. 2009, AFC title run. They lose to Peyton. It happens on the road. The team was probably a year away. 2010, which we'll get to, you know, they lose. 2011, the team's still very good. They lost a lot of core guys that are veterans. We'll get to a thing for 2011. And then 2012, it started to all really fall apart. The team got very old very quickly. Naturally, as this happens, when you put together a veteran roster in year five of it, it's not great. A lot more was on Mark Sanchez that year. And Thanksgiving, they're 4-6. They're playing Tom Brady. This is obviously not going to end well. The Jets are down 35-0 quickly. But it all kind of started, obviously, 14-0. Butt fumble happens. Mark Sanchez actually statistically played a pretty good game, but butt fumble happens, and it just spiraled into one of those games where, like, I couldn't watch it. I was like, this sucks. Like, I'd rather just hang out with my family. Like, this is horrifying. As a guy, I was a true Dolphins fan at the time, obviously, in terms of having no connection to the Jets. No, I'm saying it's having no connection to the Jets at all. Like, not even – do you remember where you kind of were watching that game going?
Yeah, I was at a Thanksgiving dinner in Miami with a family member, my mom, and I think I probably was eating a glizzy at the time, to be honest. just thinking about my brain saying glizzy, so I'm guessing I had to be eating a glizzy at that time. But, you know, I remember, like, you know, just periodically checking in and like, oh, shit, like, getting their ass kicked. But I don't ever remember actually watching the butt fumble live. I was just in and out, you know what I'm saying? Like, I do remember where I was, but I was just, again, like, in and out. But, man, like, who would have thought, like, over a decade later, like, that's still a fixture within Jets history. Like, Mark Sanchez will always be renowned for that play, right? Like, people talk about that play more than, like, his two AFC, like, the two times he helped lead the Jets to the AFC Championship game.
It's crazy. It sucks because.
Oh, no. It doesn't suck. This is fantastic. Continue.
No, I mean, it sucks in the aspect of, like, certain plays will define people's careers one way or another, right? And for Mark, as much as I know Mike Weiss, that Mike Mustoff was on my pod and was like, Mark was terrible. You know, look, no other quarterback's taken the Jets to back-to-back AFC title games. And whether it's how much Mark had to do with it or not, he's still the quarterback. And Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl, and Brad Johnson. We don't talk about how awful they were the other years, or Joe Flacco. We don't talk about Joe Flacco self-tearing his own ACL because he slid like an idiot. Like, we don't talk about that stuff. We don't talk about Brady getting walked off at home in a playoff game or because he threw a pick six, all these different things we talk about because they're remembered for these other moments. So Mark Sanchez, whether people like it or not, is remembered for a incredibly embarrassing play, almost more embarrassing. Brandon Moore, hell of a strong backside there to be able to basically decapitate your quarterback and make himself fumble. Impressive stuff. Brandon Moore is a really good player in the NFL, and he's only remembered as a right guard because of using his ass to make Mark Sanchez fumble. So that one's not great. What do we want to go to next? We want to go to 2010, or should we go to the Bills and the Giants games?
Most definitely Bills.
Bills? Okay, let's see. I believe from Jameer here.
I definitely had to say that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Week 17 of the 15th season, and then the overall 16th season. Like, you know, like, that was lightning in a bottle, don't get me wrong, but, like, everything was going right. You know, we just knocked off the Patriots. You know what I'm saying? We at, what, 10-5? We going to the 5-win Bills, Rex Ryan coaching. It's like, okay, bet. We about to knock them out the way, you know, get at our old coach, and then we moving. You know, and everybody seen us getting hot, you know, so it's like, it's kind of like that Colts last year where it's like, okay, if they get in, you know, they might shake up the table, and these dudes go out there and completely fold. And then the 16th season, you know, we coming back, and then, you know, the media is hyping it up a little bit. They're like, okay, you got to watch out for the Jets. They was 10-6. You know, they might be Super Bowl sleepers. So, you know, my head's already boosted up at this point. Like, what, Fitzmagic had like 30 touchdowns. Decker and B. Marsh, I think, broke some like receiver touchdown records or something. Like, you know, I'm like, okay, yo, we're cooking right now. And then that season is just trash. So I'm like, yo, at that point, like, my hope was like tarnished. I'm like, yo, like, yeah. And then, you know, we haven't had a winning season since. So then it's like, oh my God.
We'll get to this. And then Paulie G, yours quickly.
Definitely 2015 Bills game at the end of the year. That shit was brutal, man. I was at the Patriots game when we beat them in overtime, and I thought for sure, I was like, I was 15 years old. I was like, holy shit, we're doing it. We're going to the fucking playoffs. Next week rolls by, shattered. All my dreams, all my hopes, just shattered. It was horrible. But I mean, it makes sense. It adds up for being a Jets fan. Like, we all expected it.
Bills game, as Greg Armstrong, who's a TOJ contributor, diehard Celtics guy, went to Cortland with me. He has an infamous picture sitting in the crowd in Buffalo that got on CBS of him just looking like a depressed mess. That game sucked for a lot of reasons. Different than the Patriots game, the Buff fumble. Yes, the Buff fumble was the most embarrassing play, but like, that team was not very good in 2012. They, you know, would go on to be very awful, obviously, and it was a rightful kind of ending to that run. 2015 team was good. Like, they set a ton of records. As much as I don't like Ryan Fitzpatrick, and that's another story for another time, Brandon Marshall had 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns, and Decker had, like, I think 1,200 yards or 1,100 yards and a bunch of touchdowns. Chris Ivory was fun. Revis was still really good, and they brought Crow back, and they brought the band back together on defense, and Todd Bowles first year, McCagney was executive of the year. Like, that was a team at 10-5. No one wanted to see in the playoffs. They just beat the Patriots in overtime. They just were like a really fun team to watch. They threw the ball around the yard. They were a little exciting. They beat the Giants in the last seconds. They beat, I think, Jacksonville in the last second. Like, it was just a really cool team because it was out of nowhere, kind of. It wasn't a team anyone expected to be that good. To go up and lose in Buffalo because they didn't show up, Ryan Fitzpatrick turned back into Ryan Fitztragic, as someone put on my timeline. He's allergic to the playoffs, as everyone knows, so that was probably predictable. They're playing against Rex Ryan, and as a Bills coach, the first year after he had just been fired from the Jets, and like the Bills were terrible. And it just, it sucks because it was like that team could have made some noise in the playoffs. That felt like a team nobody wanted to, nobody wanted to play. And to go up the season finale, a division opponent with nothing to play for, coached by your former coach, and then to lose like that. And like the whole game hinged upon one play down the sidelines where you have a Jet drop the ball. It's, that sucks. I know the Dolphins actually have done it twice to the Jets in the last 15 years of knocking the Jets out of the playoffs. Once in Miami where Santonio Holmes quit, the other time where, Brett Favre's arm fell off. And
Dolphins. Yeah, I'm surprised that nobody mentioned that. You know, I was hoping somebody was going to mention
that. Yeah, no one mentioned either game. That those games sucked.
I'm surprised. Nobody mentioned how fantastic that game, like how heart-wrenching, how gut-wrenching that game was. You know, I wanted to hear that. You know what I'm saying? But, that's not here nor there. So here's my thing with the 2015. So I agree that it was heart-wrenching. But the people that believe that you guys would have went on a playoff run on drugs, you got your quarterback was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, he turned into Ryan Fitzpatrick when you guys thought that he was going to, help get you to the playoffs. He showed you that he is Ryan Fitzpatrick. So what would you think in the playoffs, Ryan Fitzpatrick wouldn't be Ryan Fitzpatrick? You might have got one win, because I will say the matchups, you could, I think, either play the Texans or the Bengals on with A.J. McCarron, which is, all right, that's fair. But after that, then what?
I want to say 2015 was who? Patriots they would have gotten again, maybe? Patriots were damn good in 2015.
I think the Broncos went to Super Bowl that year in 2015.
New England would have lost to Denver. Denver's the best defense. That was 2015. Right. That was they won the Super Bowl with Peyton with no arm. No one was beating that team. The issue is, what's more tragic, the game sucked, but like that's not what bothered me. What bothered me is everyone watched that game, including the Jets coaching staff in front office, and said, you know, would be really smart is overpaying Ryan Fitzpatrick and then saying he faltered when he needed him most, and then let's now go pay him as a guy who is not liked by teammates, whether don't ever believe whatever you hear, because that's not true. He's liked by like three or four guys in the roster, usually the receiver he targets, maybe a center specifically if they're white. And then he couldn't get you to the playoffs, and every team makes the same mistake over and over. The Redskins Commanders put all their eggs in the Fitzpatrick basket last year, because they thought they were a quarterback away. And guess what? He got hurt because he's allergic to the playoffs. That sucked. That was what sucked, because it was referenced. I don't remember which voicemail it was referenced, 2016. That's what was more disappointing. They tried to run it back with the guys that were all lightning in a bottle. Like, B. Marsh was a great player, but like there was obviously always some tension with Brandon Marshall, and there's sometimes self-admittedly he's like, you know, he has, I'm pretty sure he's self-admittedly bipolar or something. So, that kind of went off the cliffs, and Ryan Fitzpatrick was really, really bad. And that was just disappointing. We'll get to two more here. Honorable mention, we were going to talk about the 1986 stuff. We got some talks about that with Mark Astino's roughing the passer call, the double overtime loss in Cleveland. I'm not going to get into that. Neither of us were alive, and I don't feel like I have the same connection to it. And I don't feel like you do either. So we can, we'll just honorable mention bring that one up.
Having a connection to the Jets in the 80s?
When
Dan Marino was doing his thing? Continue. Sorry.
So let's get to...
I don't even care that much about Dan Marino, to be honest. But go ahead.
All right. So let's get to the Steelers. We'll get to Steelers first. I think let's get here. I believe this is the Steelers one. From Ronnie.
Obviously, there's no shortage of nightmares when you're a Jets fan. The 97 season finale comes to mind, the AFC Championship in 98, the Doug Bryan game. But you're lying to yourself if you're not saying the 2011 AFC Championship against the Steelers, right? Coming off the Patriots game, it really felt like we were a team of destiny, but we just came out so flat, and the most pessimistic Jets fans, which is the large majority of us, will tell you, they are convinced, I am convinced, Antonio Brown doesn't make that third down catch we're going to the Super Bowl and we're playing a team who we competed against earlier in the season. There's so many what ifs in that game. You know, the Mark Sanchez fumble at the end of the half felt unnecessary, but it happened. It was just incredibly disappointing. And it really felt like that was our chance. That was the end of the Rex Ryan era. And it's frustrating to this day.
So I will say this. The one thing I don't agree with, that we will get to the end of the Rex Ryan era. That will be our last one. That Jets team is genuinely really, really, really good. I feel like the team in 2009 was a year early. I think they got really hot in the playoffs. To beat Peyton on the road with a really good Indy team, to beat Tom Brady on the road, and probably the best win for the Jets. And, you know, that was I'm pretty sure that Patriots team was 14-2, I believe, or 13-3. They were like really, really good.
Yeah, really good that year.
And Brady like talks about it in Man in the Tunnel, or Man in whatever the show was. Man, the arena, he's like, that season, like, I was convinced we were winning the title. They go in there, they beat them. They've got all these Hall of Famers that come to the Jets that year. They stacked up. You've got prime Revis, prime Cromartie. The list goes on and on. You know, Chris Jenkins getting hurt sucked, and Damian Woody tore his Achilles, I believe, in week 17, which was obviously super unfortunate, but you still felt like this team's going to win the title. They've beaten the two best quarterbacks maybe ever back-to-back weeks in the road. They'd already beaten that Steelers team, I think, week 15 or week 16 that year in Pittsburgh already. They've already beaten them. You just felt like they're winning this game. They're going to win the Super Bowl. They'd played Green Bay early in the year at home. They lost, but it was like 9-0. And it was like one of those games. Charles Woodson won Defensive Player of the Year. Everyone felt like Revis should have won again and the whole thing. So it was like this perfect matchup. You felt like the Jets, they're winning the Super Bowl. And yeah, they did not show up for 30 minutes, and you cannot do that in the NFL and expect to win. And, you know, Mike DeVito on my pod said he thinks if Chris Jenkins is playing and not him, he joked that, like, you know, they go to that Super Bowl because he left his gap assignment, and David Harris lost Antonio Brown in coverage because Antonio Brown was uncoverable, as he was for his entire career on and off the field. So it's that – that one to me, I thought was going to be the most popular one. Everyone still holds on to that team for the right reasons. I mean, they were fun to watch, but it just, that sucks because you felt like even 2009, I feel like the team, maybe they could have won the Super Bowl. New Orleans was an absolute wagon. And like, I didn't feel like,
What does that even mean? Absolute wagon.
Like, I don't know that the Jets were beating New Orleans. Even if they beat Indy that year, I feel like the Jets are winning. I think the Jets would have beaten the Packers in that game if they get there. I truly believe that.
What does an absolute wagon mean?
Like, they, I don't know. I just like, they were just a train. Like, they weren't gonna get stopped.
I'm gonna start using that.
I usually use it in a different term, but that's how you're not appropriate for the podcast. I get that one. That one to me is the most clear as day. Like, the game that mattered the most. It wasn't a regular season game. It wasn't week 7. It wasn't, you know, even losing a wild card or losing a week 17 game that maybe right. Out of the playoffs. It's like the AFC title game. You lose by 5 points because you shit the bed for two quarters.
What's so crazy about like that run? Because I remember both of those runs as a kid. Like, I started paying attention to football in 2005. Like, I started like, okay, I'm genuinely like, I understand what's happening a little bit better. Like I have legitimate recollection of those, you know, those years. So obviously 2005, the Dolphins go, I believe, 9-7 with Nick Saban. The year after that, they go like 6-10. I think the Patriots won the Super Bowl they didn't win 2005. In 2006, they didn't win. 2007, they go 17 and they lose in the Super Bowl. But in 2008, the Dolphins win the division. In 2009, the Patriots Shout out Chad. Then 2009. The Patriots win the division. The Jets make the AFC Championship game. And then, obviously, the Patriots obviously go 14-2. And then the Jets beat them and go to the AFC Championship game. So, at that point, obviously, I knew about the Patriots, you know, having Super Bowls, yada, yada. But for me, it was just like, all right, they won it, like, a few years ago. Like, that's whatever. So, during that span, I'm like, yo, the Patriots and the Jets are really going to be, like, a dominant force going forward. Because at that time, I was like, you know, early teenage years, you know what I'm saying, toddler, whatever those numbers are. And I'm thinking, damn, like, how the hell the Dolphins going to be able to compete with this, you know? Because at that point, like, the Patriots hadn't been as dominant as they were earlier in the 2000s. Obviously, they went back on their other run. But at that point, it was really like Patriots or Jets. And I remember that used to petrify me all the time. Like me and my best friend Johnny, we talk about all the time, like how in that 2010 run, you guys beat Tom Brady and Peyton Manning back-to-back games and didn't make the Super Bowl. Like that's
doesn't make any sense. They would have, if they would have completed that, they would have beaten Rodgers, Big Ben, Brady, and Manning in a four-game stretch all on the road. Right. That doesn't make any sense. That Jets coaching staff was loaded.
It was loaded. Like a lot of those guys on that coaching staff became head coaches, like the defensive coordinator, Mike
Patton. Anthony Lynn was on that staff. Yeah, Anthony Lynn was on it. Obviously, Westhoff was on that. Pat Callahan.
You know,
it was loaded. They were on Hard Knocks. They actually were good and should have been on Hard Knocks and then carried it through. They opened MetLife that year. They lost the Ravens, of course.
Matt Cavanaugh, who was on the Jets staff last year, he was on that staff too. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he's around for a while. That Tannenbaum front office had a bunch of guys. It sucked. And it felt like that team had one more run in them, it was the last of Jericho Cotchery on the team, which was Mike Tannenbaum's probably his biggest error as GM, even worse than Tebow. He's self-admittedly said that a million times. They let D Wood ended up retiring. They let Tony Richardson walk and he ended up retiring. They let Jason Taylor walk. They brought back LT 1 year too many. It was like everything. They brought in Derek Mason for three games, who apparently never practiced once, that's a whole nother discussion. I'm not ranting about Derek Mason on this podcast. Then they brought in Plax. And that team. So the Jets will bring it back. So we'll get to those last one. The team ended up bringing, they won on 9/11. They beat the Cowboys. Revis was still in his prime. This team was still really good, but they were starting to give Mark Sanchez more leeway and try to be him more of a leader. Kind of start to give him more of the offense. And let's see if we get to it here. Find the message. This one is from Josh. We will hit the Giants Christmas Eve debacle before we wrap here. So, Josh, we'll play your message now.
Hey, guys. So, other than the obvious choices of 2010 AFC Championship game against the Steelers or 2015 Week 17 against the Bills, I got to say 2011 Week 16 against the Giants when Victor Cruz ripped that 99-yard touchdown on 3rd and 10 and the Giants ruined Christmas and went on to win the Super Bowl, that was pretty brutal. So, yeah, those three games for me have been the worst.
That Giants game, that was the official to me end of the – it officially actually did end, I'm pretty sure, in Miami. Santonio Holmes quit. The Jets lost in Miami. It was a million degrees out. All they needed to do was beat the Giants, Eagles, or Dolphins week 15, 16, and 17. All technically on the road, and they lost all three. They were 8-5. People still thought they could compete for a title. They lose 3rd and 10. Giants are backed up on their own 1 yard line. The Jets were trying to turn the city a little bit. It'd be the fourth year in a row. The Jets were better than the Giants. And it's like this whole fun thing. Rex Ryan sends out only Plaxico Burress as a captain, talking crazy shit all week. I'm chirping all my friends in high school. I'm a Jets fan. Revis is the GOAT. You know, he's going to destroy the Giants, the whole thing as a classic, sophomore in high school would do. Victor Cruz catches a stick pattern. Eric Smith's the slowest person I've ever seen in my life. The Jets whiff on a tackle. He goes 99 yards, and it was just like everything collapsed. It all just caved in. Sanchez was just threw 75 times for 240 yards. It was just everything about that day sucked. It's Christmas Eve. Again, another holiday ruined. Then the Giants go on to win the Super Bowl, beat Brady again, something the Jets had just, it just was like, the Jets just collapsed the previous 2 years in the AFC title game, and then finish it off. You thought this was the last year they had a chance. They overcame a bunch I don't know. And Victor Cruz saucing, it was just disgusting.
Yeah, man. I remember that. I mean, if you guys want to hear one of my darkest Dolphin moments, It was when it was 2013. Y'all beat us. All we had to do was win one game to get in the playoffs, and y'all beat us in week 17. I think 20-7.
Yep. Geno Smith had 158 passer rating.
No, wasn't that game. That was the year after.
Oh, that was the weirdest game ever. The Jets were terrible, and like Geno just was like, yeah, I'm actually good, and it's like,
so you're not. That one for sure was not fun. I came from church after that day, and I don't think I went back to church the following week. But
wow, yeah, you did need to win one game. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I think it was 20-7. I remember like it was tied 7-7. I remember Tannehill.
20-7. Yep, Tannehill. Yep, there it is. The Dolphins are 8-7. Joe Philbin's the coach.
Yep, and that was that. So
yeah, you were up 7-0 too.
Yeah. Mike Wallace touchdown pass from Brian Tannehill, and yeah.
7-point favorites at home. Sheldon Richardson had a rushing touchdown. What the hell is going on in this game? Why do I not remember this? Oof, Tannehill's stat line. Jesus Christ. 20-40 with three picks. Oh, D. Milner had two picks, and Ed Reed. Wow.
Who's that, man?
Ed Reed. Oh, wow. That is our man, Leger, had two tackles.
Nice. He just called me. I actually have to call him back, so he just called me actually. So
but yeah, no, we'll obviously continue to do some fun stuff like this throughout the offseason. You know, we'll do some most exciting memories and you know, all these different things. Again, please keep leaving the voicemails. They're fun to listen to. Get your voice on the show as well. So DJ, any final thoughts before we wrap?
No, that's it. You know, appreciate y'all sending that in. Now I can go eat breakfast. I'm starving. There's no OTAs today either. So, yeah, man, I'm going to enjoy this day. You know, write a little bit. Write about Thick Wilson. And that's that. So,
Hashtag Beefy Zach, Beefy Robert. we'll be back. And appreciate everyone for listening. Talk to you guys next week or later this week.